Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses of Seizures. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Today is Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. I almost jumped out of my chair because I have quite the lineup of beverage experts from New York City, including one of my favorite Heritage Radio Network hosts, Damon Bolte of the Speakeasy. How are you, man? Come on, jump on the yacht. All right, man, it's crazy. And we've got a very special producer of a cherry wine from Denmark, and we're talking about local terroir and, you know, what they're growing and how that becomes like an excellent, you know, beverage that we can consider like top quality. And we've got my good buddy Chris Bala, Grand Army Bar.
Hi, Jimmy.
And another special beverage person, Mr. Chad Walsh of Agern, the new fancy Nordic restaurant in Grand Central.
How's it going?
So we got a lot to talk about. Agern just got a 3-star from the New York Times.
Big relief,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, between
Congrats.
Damon and Chris, and we also have B.R. Roya from Shelton Brothers, we've got quite a panel of experts. And we're going to be talking more about, to me, it's oddball drinks. You know, Agern's got some meads, and we're talking about cherry wine. So for me, this was kind of out of left field, but I went to your website today, and I saw what you're doing, and I can see, like, the craft and the quality. So we're going to try to focus our show on that today. And B.R., give us a quick intro of your friends and just tell us about their product and where they're from.
Well, they first came to our attention through Mikkeller Brewery. He has been doing a series, a Spontanale series, which is produced from 100% lambic from traditional Belgian producers. We can't name which ones, but it is all brewed at traditional producers in Belgium. And then he ages it for between 1 to 3 years, blends it, and they all have different fruits in them. And the very first one in the series was used the sour cherries that we also get the cherry wine from. So that's how we first came into contact with them, and we felt that, you know, we don't just do beer. We do ciders, we do mead, we have some spirits, and just this fit, we felt that it fit into our portfolio very well as a really unique beverage, and it also did have, as you say, a sense of place, a sense of terroir, which is, this is only being made on this island in Denmark, and it's truly unique.
Great. So the guests are Anne-Marie and Michael. Please say your names.
Yeah, I'm Michael. Thank
tell
you
us where you're from and everything.
From Denmark, from Frederiksten, cherry wine.
All right.
Hello, great to be here. My name is Anne Marie, and I'm also working at Frederiksten Estate, where we are producing a very special wine made from cherries, which is absolutely beyond comparison with anything else you have tried so far.
You know, I saw the video, and it's like, you have trees, you have a farm. It's things that I like. It's like a product from, you know, the orchards.
Exactly.
And, you know, so let's talk. Let's ask some questions because it's a new product and I don't really know anything about it. I mean, let's start with Chad at Agern.
Yeah. I mean, I first tasted the wine actually in a construction site. BR was there in Grand Central. I think we were wearing hard hats at least for part of it. But I think we have to start by talking about Danish cherries because, I mean, I think a lot of people have this idea of what a cherry is, but when you see and you taste Danish cherries, I mean, they look more like the tip of your pinky. I mean, and maybe you could talk about like what flavors are kind of unique in Danish cherries.
Aren't they typically like they have a much larger pit with very little skin and pulp, right? So the flavors are more concentrated, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. As a matter of fact, you can compare it to if we talk about regular grape wine, for instance, Cabernet Sauvignon. You know, it's not a grape that you would eat. And that's basically the same thing with the Danish cherries, sour cherries that we use to ferment this wine. So there's a lot of comparisons when it comes to traditional wine and what we do to the cherry wine. We reinvented it.
So I've never really experienced any kind of like other uses of these cherries. Were there any uses for the cherries in like culinary, like with food, or were they how were the cherries being used before the wine was being produced?
There's a very old tradition for sour cherries in Denmark. For many, many years, we have been using the sour cherries for industrial purpose. We eat a lot of cherry sauce in Denmark around Christmas time, and also in other areas where we have been eating these sour cherries for many years. And they have also been used for producing wine for many years, but not wine like we do it right now. It was more like a liqueur, very sweet wine made from cherries. And that is what is new in what Frederiksdal is doing. We are producing a wine that is produced just like you do a good red wine. We are not just taking the juice and sugar and an alcohol and add it and then have a liqueur. No, we're actually using the yeast from the cherries together with a bit of sugar to get the alcohol in our wine, and by the end of the day we have several different types of wine. In Denmark and in the area where we are, we have a very special terroir, and that is also what makes our wine very unique. Sour cherries are basically being grown in Denmark, a bit in the southern part of Sweden, and also a bit in the northern part of Germany. But especially in our area where we right now have 40 hectares, 16,000 trees with these sour cherries, we are looking very much into what we're doing in the fields, because it is in the fields that we are actually making sure that we can produce a good wine, not in the winery, because by the end of the day, it is very important to have the good raw material. And by doing it the way we do right now, as I said, we have seven different types of wine that has been maturing in various ways. The first one you're trying here is, what is it, the name?
Rancho.
Oh, Rancho. I don't know, Michael, will you explain a bit about
sure,
it?
Sure. The one you have in your glass right now is basically, it's our signature wine, so to speak. This is how it all started. You know, when we first started fermenting these cherries, we experienced that there's a high level of acidity. And we looked to other countries to see how did they manage to get the acidity down, for instance, in grape wine production. In Banyuls, in the Pyrenees, on the border between France and Spain, they make this Rancho-type wine where they leave the wine outside under open sky, get exposed to sunlight and sub-zero temperatures. So basically, we adopted that, and that's what we do. We leave this wine outside for a full year. Basically, what we do to this wine is what you shouldn't do to your own red wine. You know, sub-zero temperatures, oxidation, big 10-gallon balloons. We just leave it outside for a full year. And then after that, a full year on cognac barrels, wooden barrels from cognac.
Wow, it's really incredible. It actually, like on the nose, it's got kind of like a Pedro Ximenez sherry, like, you know, very rich and kind of like a little bit of oxidation.
Exactly.
Like it's really incredible.
I think what was really cool was that this was made in a way that we associate with like fine, you know, French dessert or sweeter style wines. And mm-hmm. And I think in the U.S. we tend to associate fruit wine that isn't made from grapes with like a much more simplistic style. Mm-hmm. And I think we've all had like bad experiences where you get like a country winery and they're like pull out this like blueberry wine or something. And it is just mm-hmm. not, this is just such a completely different product in that way.
Well, let's talk about the history, because we're talking about beverages of these unusual like port, sherries, and banyuls. You know, there's a flavor, a complexity that is, yeah, it's not a fruit wine. I mean, and Chad.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to the technique. I mean, Mourie in France is very similar too, where you're aging the wine in kind of a unique way. Down there, it's because you have these Grenache grapes grown on these very steep hills, just like battered by the wind coming off the Mediterranean. So they have these like super tannic profile. Mm. And if you don't put it in the glass demijohns outside to sort of soften the tannin, it would be kind of undrinkable. And so. I think that this wine, because of that development that it gets in the aging process, and then because of the inherent complexity of the cherries, it just ends up. I mean, we serve it as a pairing on a pretty unique dessert, which is a chocolate ganache with eggplant. The eggplant's like both caramelized and crispy, and then there's a purple basil granite over top. I mean, and so you have, you know, such a unique set of flavors on that dish, and they're complementary without being too contrasting, you know.
Mm. I mean, tell us, how do you, you know, what mature it so the tannins soften? I mean, I saw a photo of McKellar. It's on our Instagram now, Beer Sessions Radio. McKellar standing in all these giant glass, you know, little. Tell us what that process is and what those are.
Those are actually the Rancho balloons that we leave outside for a full year. And this is basically how it started. When we first started making this wine, we adapted this Banyuls process. Only we did it in greenhouses because we thought that the Danish temperatures, the cold winters would be too rough for the wine. But it turns out that it's actually working pretty well in Denmark, because we have the long, light, bright hours during the summertime, and rough winter temperatures. So it's we think, we're not sure about it, but we think we're one of the biggest Rancho producers in Europe right now.
So talk us through what that is. So how do you ferment it, and then what are these Ranchos?
Well, right now, or by the end of August, we pick all the cherries, and the first couple of days we let them ferment spontaneous in our fermenter tanks. And after 3 days, we start pressing the whole berries or the whole cherries in our press, and with the juice that we then have. It starts due to the fact that we have now been working on this for 10 years. We have our own yeast production in our winery, so we don't add any artificial yeast to our production. It is the natural yeast from the berries, together with a bit of sugar, that we start the fermentation of the wines. And after a couple of months, we managed to get it around 14%. In alcohol, producing alcohol in cherries, you actually have to use a lot extra sugar as well, because they eat a lot of to get to the alcohol percentage. After half a year in our steel tanks, we then have some wines that are bottled after a year. That is our vintage, but all the other wines are then matured from half a year to 3 years. Our reserve is 3 years in our barriques. We use used barriques that have previously been used for red wine, but we also have some new ones in between. And then, of course, there's the Rancho, that when we are managed to get it on 14% in alcohol, it stands. Rancho actually means acids in Spanish, but it has nothing to do with the taste or anything in the wine. But actually, after the year outside, we get it into the cognac barrels, and 1 year or 1.5 years more in those ones, and then we have an excellent product, the Rancho.
Yeah, it's like one of those words that I've heard a lot of different etymological analyzation of, like, what it really means. But to me, in the beverage context, it's like that unknown quantity that adds this, like, extra complexity of, like, earthiness. Or, you know, you get it in scotch or brandy or, you know, other things.
That little bit of rancid.
What is
in a good way.
What is unique here is also that the three guys who owns this winery, they actually have a passion. One was an entrepreneur who actually wanted to invent something new. The other guy was, he is still a journalist in our national radio programs, but he also has a passion for wine and has been working on wine farms in France. And the last one is a very famous chef in Denmark, Jan Friis Mikkelsen, who was actually one of the guys who invented the whole new Nordic kitchen movement in Denmark.
So Jens and the owner of Egerner, Klaus, are very close friends. And so when we tasted with BR, it was kind of like, I'm going to kind of have to buy this wine no matter what. But I was so excited when we pulled the cork, because it was actually, like, really amazing and delicious and sort of fit into what we were about at Egerner. And I could see using it in a culinary context. And I think when you hear cherry wine from Denmark that you have to carry because it's made by a chef's friend, you're a little like anxious to pull that first cork, but it's not really
cherry wine then. Like, how do you sell it, Bjor? Because I want to ask the boys from Grand Army.
Well, I mean, that's, we always have to preface this as it's not a sweet like cherry hearing, it's not a liqueur, it's a wine made from cherries. But the fact that, you know, putting this through our beer channels, it's actually a fairly easy sell in terms of, aside from the price, we're able to say, look, this is made spontaneously from, you know, it's spontaneous fermentation, whether it's the juice that's been sitting out or for some of the products, it's the cherries themselves that sit out for a day.
Yeah, but also just the yield alone, like what I pointed out earlier, you know, like there's very little, like with these wild cherries, you know, it's like there's the pit is so big,
yeah,
and then
much
there's
more
very
the
little
flesh.
So it takes tons. I mean, like Hans Riesebauer makes his wild cherry eau de vie, and there's a reason why that 375 milliliter bottle costs so much, because it takes so many of these to make this product.
When you're making eau de vie. Yeah.
especially when you're making own beer.
Yeah.
So,
But we've definitely gotten good reception. You know, this is it's the type of flavors that, with the beers that we import and the beers that we sell, people are accustomed to something different, and it just fits right in, and it's a very good reception to it.
That's great. And then the name is actually Frederiksdal Kirsebær Vine.
Excellent.
You're coaching me in the Danish. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Woo!
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio. We're talking in Danish. We're drinking this Kirsebærvin. It's actually a fortified wine made from cherries, and we didn't say that up front. And now I'm tasting it, yeah, it's like Bandul's Madeira port.
Yeah, it's It's not like anything that you'd really ever taste out there. Like you mentioned Cherry Hearing before. I think like you have to really completely, just wipe off.
I think you take cherry out of it, and you just use the Danish words,
It's rich and acidic at the same time.
Well, and like, I think it's really cool too that they're fortifying. I mean, there's a lot of great fortified wine out there made with sort of anonymous fortification brandy, and this is cherry brandy that they make on the estate, and they use that to fortify the wine. And I think that adds like another level of complexity. And going back to the Roncito, I think that there's like another layer of aromatics.
I have a weakness
for
this. I don't know if you know. Fortify wine is one of my weaknesses. So I want to refill this next one. This is one of my favorites.
This is the one we work with at Ager, and it's the Reserve, which is blended from a few different sort of vintages of cherry, I guess you could say. But you can speak more to exactly. This one's finished in cognac.
Reserve has been maturing for a minimum 3 years in our barriques and oak barrels, and by doing this, we get a very dry wine. And so basically what it's used for is tapas, pâté, foie gras, which is completely also a new idea for the Danish population, because previously, as you said, when you said cherry wine, they thought desserts. But right now, where we are the only one in the world producing a wine made from cherries the way we do it here, we can actually manage to give a completely new taste into the cherry wine, so they can be dry. You tasted the Rancho, that is more like a port wine, and that is what we're introducing now in Europe and also here in the United States, and we can see, especially in the restaurants now, that they are really looking into how to experiment and introduce a new taste to their customers and guests, trying to see how they react to this new taste. So the Reserve is also used for duck and geese and all different types of meat, and that is very interesting.
I like that. I saw on your website that you have a gastronomy section. You have things that you cook with it. There was the cherry wine glazed venison, and you had a beetroot dessert. But also for cocktails, I mean, I noticed you had some things like the Frederick style fizz and the Nordic bramble, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
especially with this second one that we're tasting. I mean, it's more than just cherry. Like for a bramble, it makes a hell of a lot of sense. You know, like it's got like darker berry fruit to it, but it's got the. I keep going back to this acidity. I really want to, like, my first instinct outside of a bramble is to use it like a fortified wine and replace like a vermouth, you know, with this, you know, like just like kind of start easy and classic and then really go weird. You know, I want to get weird with this.
Yeah. And I want you to think about that. I want you to tell us what your drink would be if you had to make one tonight. Are you that kind of bartender, Dan, where I can say, hey, man, I like, you know, the Kears of Biervine and, you know, something else. What should I have?
Dude, honestly, tasting it right now, and it's not just because I'm a huge fan of root beer, but, like... What do you think? I mean, like tasting this, like, I kind of want to have, like, that, like, sarsaparilla, kind of, like, vanilla. Like,
kinda, no,
like,
we love it.
Because it's got the acidity in there, in the fruit, but it's, like, but it's not sweet. Like, to give it, like, a, like in a cocktail, I kind of want to, like, take it, like, cool it, like, throw some things like the sarsaparilla in there and cinnamon and, like, vanilla, you know, and, like, make it kind of, like kind of keep a cool earthy vibe with it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but even taking those flavors and putting them into something, you know, more in the Manhattan kind of fold too. If like you use sarsaparilla bitters or something, and like, you know, a good rye whiskey with this. I mean, I'm not overthinking the like cherries and Manhattan thing.
Chris Ball,
you know, oh yeah, well, you know what? I didn't even think about that. It's like, but it is very true. I mean, like, obviously, it's garnished with cherry, but this is different. You know, yeah. this to me, like when I'm tasting this, it doesn't like if I were blind tasting this, like the first thing that I would go for would probably not be cherries, which is really interesting about it.
I mean, cherries have a bad name, you know. It's like, whether it's a bad maraschino cherry or
Cherry Garcia.
Or even a Kirsch or something, you know, unless it's really good. Right. You know, I don't usually think that well, but creeks are great too. Lambic creeks too.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Great, and you know? I think that, like, one of the things that we talked about with Harold, and one of the reasons that Jens, I think, is part of this project is because, you know, Denmark had to sort of rediscover its cuisine a little bit. And that's, you know, you call it the New Nordic Kitchen, and sometimes we call it the New Nordic Manifesto, because that's really what it's this that a bunch of chefs locked themselves in a room to try to figure out what was Nordic cuisine. And, you know, Klaus, who owns Agern and, you know, founder of Noma and all these things, you know, he started his career importing French products into Denmark. And even Chef Gunnar, who's from Iceland, the chef at Agern, you know, his restaurants were always about serving foie gras and truffles and caviar. And then the recession happened, and he had to sort of come up with a new sort of vocabulary, a new culinary vocabulary, which wasn't just throwing expensive French stuff on it. And so for Klaus, it was finding apple vinegar and working with an orchard to make his own vinegar, because, you know, that was the first step. But, you know, creating kind of a wine culture in Denmark is, I think, kind of it's a cool thing. I mean, it's not something that sort of existed before in this way.
Quick one, Chris Bala.
Yes, yes, sir.
You're tasting these.
They're wonderful.
Fortified wines.
I don't want to get away so much from that beautiful tapestry of Danish cuisine and history and all that, but I think it's really interesting that, you know, it's a new, very new product. The flavor profile it's really hard to describe to people listening to this what we're tasting, because I think when I first heard that...
They should just go get it.
They should, yeah. That's the sales pitch. But
we're in Grand Central Terminal.
Yeah.
Come in the Vanderbilt and 42nd Street entrance.
Is there any other place that sells this besides Agern and Grand Central Station, New York City?
I'd have to get my sales report. I know Aquavit is doing... takes this in. We've got... we have a few wine shops that are starting to bring it in. It's now I'm completely blanking. This is I should have printed out the list.
I mean, I'm
on the spot.
I'm definitely planning on bringing this into Grand Army too for some
White Hotel
fun.
Is using it both for cocktails and for pouring. I apologize. I'll come back with you.
It's cool. Let's go back to you guys. So you guys, where you are? You're on an island in Denmark.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us about the place you're from.
Just to follow up on what Chad was just talking about, with we're reinventing the Danish cuisine, the Danish kitchen, because the island of Lolland, where you find the estate, the Frederiksdal estate, exactly. it's one of the hottest places in Denmark, and actually there's no place in Europe where these Danish Stevns cherries they have better growing conditions than along the coastline in southern Denmark and northern Germany, which is where we're situated. So that's what we should be doing in the future.
And were the cherries already growing, or did, you know, the owners decide to plant them?
No, as a matter of fact, this year is our 10th anniversary. In 2006, Harold, who owns the estate, he already had the orchards with cherries, and it was used for food production. No, not wine production.
He was saying he sent most of them to Poland, I think. Like
exactly.
Polish cherries are, you know, kind of more what we associate with American cherries. They're super sweet, and they make a lot of juice from them. Mm. But that the Danish cherries kind of added that, you know, that extra quality.
Tannin
and acid to balance out the fruit juice. And but that wasn't, like, a viable kind of economic choice anymore?
No, exactly. So he met Morten and Jan, and they decided, why not? Let's try and ferment the cherries and see if we can make wine, regular wine based on cherries. And here we are, 10 years after, and sitting here with you fine guys and drinking cherry wine from Lolland.
But it's interesting. You're kind of above the wine strip. You're in these northern climates.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anyone else doing what you're doing?
Not yet. No. Hopefully in the future more will come. And you know, the more the better. We would like some competition in Denmark. Maybe we could brand ourselves as a different kind of agricultural country than we've been branding ourselves the past generations.
I mean, yeah, because typically it's a lot of like root vegetables and like fish, yeah. Like salted, you know, like it's yeah. What was the name of the place? It was like close to Jimmy's, like back in the day. Now it's a barbecue place. It's in Lower East Side. Katie Stipe used to work there.
Quilties?
No, it was no, it was
it's the one where the barbecue
Van Dog.
Sticks. Yeah, Van Dog.
Van Dog. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Philip Kirsch and Clark.
Yeah, friend. Yeah, Philip Kissy. Yeah, man. That was the first time I'd ever had any kind of like Nordic Scandinavian like from that region like any kind of fare that was kind of like pulling itself out of the traditional like and there was all kinds of aquavit and like Katie was doing like cool things with like she was doing like a carrot and like tarragon, I think it was like eau de vie and like all kinds of stuff. So it was cool to see that there was actually this forward thinking with chefs and bartenders in New York City and in the world. And now like what you were just saying, you know, like you're kind of extracting. Like,
you know, Chad and I were talking earlier too. He was talking about how you guys are actually really at the forefront. We said, "Oh, yeah. I know a restaurant that was trying to do smorgasbord and traditional." Danish food, but there wasn't really the interest in that.
It's so funny because, like, the Nordic cuisine, to me, in a way, like, inherited kind of where, like, sort of the Spanish molecular gastronomy kind of left off. And I think the Nordic cuisine picked up that banner of being sort of the sort of most au courant or whatever you want to say, the coolest sort of culinary tradition. And it's so funny because it's sort of a new one that was sort of recreated in the early 2000s. Some people had tried to sort of bring it to New York, but I think that it's been really fun to be a part of it. And obviously aquavit, who you mentioned, has been there forever. But it's been, I was super excited to get to participate in sort of, you know, and help out somebody who's been really integral in the sort of genesis of that cuisine to sort of bring it to New York. And the reception's been amazing. I mean, I was saying there are a lot of Scandinavians in New York. Like, you had no idea how many Danish people there are in New York until you open a restaurant owned by a Dane. And they're also funny. They all want to come take selfies. Like, they'll walk in. You'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, we don't open until 5:30. And they're like, don't worry, we're Danish. And then they just take a bunch of pictures. And then they go on. And then it's such a sweet kind of, like, self-supporting culture, I guess you could say, where if it's Danish, they really want to, like, support the Danes. And it's true of Scandinavia in a broader sense. But the sort of most exciting reaction, I think, has been from, you know, really hardcore New Yorkers who eat Italian food or French food 4 or 5 nights out of the week and are saying, oh, I can't get this in L.A. or I can't get this in
so
San Francisco.
The dish that sounds the weirdest in the New York Times 3-star review of Agron, it was about some kind of like root beet burnt something.
Yes, beetroot and salt crust. But you know, in going with the sort of Nordic manifesto and all that, we try to waste as little as possible. So, like, we take our leftover mead and we make vinegar out of it. And we all of our vegetable scraps, we incinerate and to create the sort of vegetable ash. And they bind it with egg whites and sea salt and then bake the beetroot in it, which, you know, Grand Central is kind of limiting in terms of open flames and that sort of stuff. And, you know, we can't cook with lava, which Gunnar was talking about at one point. and I was like, I don't know how that... but anyway, it gives this great kind of roasted quality, even though we're just roasting in the oven. It has this sort of sense of being cooked over an open flame. yeah, it's become kind of our thing. We do it tableside, so you get to, it's like this little dinosaur egg that comes out and crack it open, and there's this beautiful roasted beet inside. You get the aromatics.
And you guys, how do you feel about, you know, Danish food in America, or do you care about Danish food at all? You know,
that's a good question. Yeah. Well, of course, we're happy that you know, the whole new Nordic thing is picking up abroad, not only in the States but also in the Far East, and we're definitely onto something, and we should do more to brand ourselves that way.
And one thing we shouldn't forget in all this is also that this is another way of introducing how to do farming in Denmark. Previously, you have been focusing very much on high yields, but right, what we're doing here and what Klaus is also doing is in his kitchen movement is actually looking into quality. So what also Frederik Stahl is introducing in the Danish world is actually looking in a completely different way on doing farming in Denmark, focusing on doing a high-quality product, not focusing on high yields, but doing it. If we were harvesting and looking at high yields, we could have perhaps 40 kilos per tree, but now we are looking into doing the absolute best wine made from cherries, and we're down having perhaps 13 kilos on average on a three, because we want them to be as dry as possible, focusing very much on the quality instead, making sure that we have the whole story. It's our own raw material, it's on our own, produced on in our own orchards. Even our alcohol now is also distilled now, we are distilling one of our wines, so it's our own alcohol we're using for some of our products. That is a completely new idea and introduction also in the Danish scene in Denmark in the farming industry, and that is also an important point in explaining about what Frederik Stahl is doing. And another thing is also that we have been introducing a new trend. 40 years ago, a lot of people were drinking cherry wine in Denmark, but then there was a period of 20, 30 years where nobody were drinking wine made from fruit. It was not trendy, it was not hyped. But right now, the last 5 years, now it's suddenly very popular to drink wine made from cherries or fruit wine in Denmark again, which is, I would say, also partly because Frederik Stahl has been introducing a completely new product made from cherries with an excellent taste. So that's a new thing also in Denmark, and that's what we are trying now to convince the rest of the world to keep follow on.
Drink the Kirsa beer, Vin.
Do you find then, with the recent resurgence of the quality of agriculture in Denmark, and with the production of these wines and like in farming, like you were just talking about, do you find, because like something we talk about a lot on Heritage Radio Network with throughout all the shows is with our culinary movement, that like the Renaissance has started about 25, 30 years ago here, and then like eventually like trickled to the wine and beer and then cocktail movement and spirits production. There's a lot of younger people who become more interested in agriculture and farming and like sustainable resources. Are you seeing a kind of resurgence like that in Denmark? Are you seeing a lot of people like younger interest in actually farming and producing these products?
Yes, for sure we do. We have the last couple of years had a festival also on Frederiksdal for fruit wine producers. And the last 10 years there has been a growing or an increase in companies looking into this cider, fruit wine. So today in Denmark we have around 20-30 companies actually trying to produce good wine made from fruit, which is a completely new development. And luckily also the new the restaurants in Denmark are really keen on introducing these. So now we also, you're able to get cider, apple cider together with your prawns in a good restaurant in Copenhagen, and that's a completely new movement. So we have the local, buy local. Organic has been a big thing in Denmark for many years, but now it's also focusing very much on good quality, very good quality.
That's great, man. We're off to a great start. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah. Woo. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, just checking in, heritageradionetwork.org. Check it out. Be a member. Also, there's a special event on October 14th and 15th at Lexington Armory on Manhattan. It's the Fall New York City Craft Beer Festival. 150-plus beers, ciders, and meads. So check it out, New York City Craft Beer Fest. .com. All right, so we're talking with these great makers of the cherry fortified cherry wine from Denmark, here with B.R. Royo from Shelton Brothers and some other experts. We're going to do a round of questions now. We've kind of like set the stage. Chris Bala from Grand Army Bar.
Well, I thought the most interesting thing with this product is that it's being brought to the United States via a beer distributor and also being kind of announced to the world, mostly because of Mikkel's involvement with the producer. Not to discredit anything you guys are doing, but I think it's very important that somebody very big in the craft beer industry is talking about this native product that has nothing to do with beer at all in Denmark. And I mean, it's not really a question at all, but more of a just a fascinating point of it to me is that, you know, the use of the power of craft beer and the exploding industry and to announce these other products that are so important. And I mean, I guess my question is, how do you feel about that? But I think it's a great, personally, I feel like it's a great thing. But
well, that's interesting because, you know, the connection between beer and cherry wine, we were talking about the appeal when it comes to young people. And I think when it comes to Mikkel and other small breweries, when you compare them to the big breweries, both here in the United States, and we have some big breweries in Denmark as well.
Obviously,
There's a new movement of young people who obviously are into this whole microbrewery thing, and I think it's the same thing with the cherry wine. You know, they're not familiar with the reputation, so to speak, that cherry wine used to have, and they don't care. They just acknowledge the fact that we are making a high quality product.
Well, you know what I want to say about how changing, you know, what's trendy? Hmm? You know, for us, with this show and working with Shelton Brothers for years, McKellar was that name. Oh, my God, McKellar, that guy's a god. His beers are so good. And I posted today a photo of McKellar standing in the middle of your Rancho, you know, little bottles.
Yeah.
And someone said, who is that Mike Keller guy? So, you know, if you may not know who McKellar is, you know, he's one of these Danish guys that kind of broke open into the States and it was pretty trendy. But
well, and that's actually why Anne-Marie and Michael are here this week, is that Friday evening and Saturday is the first edition of the Copenhagen Beer Celebration in Boston. Mikkel has been putting this on in Copenhagen, I believe, for 4 or 5 years, and it's very similar, little plug to our festival, which moves around the country every year. This year in Louisville, last weekend of October, where
Damon's interested, he wants to go.
I do too.
I get passes, man. Copenhagen Beer Celebration.
But it's where, you know, at the Copenhagen Beer Celebration, same as our festival, the brewers are actually there pouring their product. It's not like you've just got some sales rep or volunteer being like, I don't know, it's an IPA. And the brewers are also bringing a lot of special beers. So this is very interesting. And when I was in Copenhagen in May for this year's edition, Anne-Marie was there pouring the wines. And, you know, there were people there. They were having their Agosa at one place, and they were having, you know, an Imperial IPA somewhere else. They were having, you know, a stout, and then they were going over and trying the cherry wines. And there was always a line to try them. It wasn't that they were just standing there being the odd man out at a beer festival. People were really into it.
So you must be looking forward to that festival. It's this weekend in Boston.
Absolutely, absolutely. It turned out to be a huge success in Copenhagen. Although it was a beer festival, so yeah, we were very excited about participating in the Boston edition of Copenhagen Beer Celebration.
You know, my question is about your product is how you serve it, like in a restaurant or a tasting set, because the first one we had was like more like a fortified wine, like a Banyuls, and the next one is very dry. But then we went to the sweeter one, and now I'm going back to the dry. But the contrasts are really, you know, pronounced, and I find like my palate has to adjust, so it's hard to go from one to the other then back. Mm. So how do you guys, and maybe in some of your restaurants, how do you work with these kind of products that are they're stronger, they can be sweeter?
We don't do this at the restaurant, but BR had some Berliner Weiss here from McKellar. Then I just added some of the cherry wine to it. I got to say that's a delicious little hybrid. But we typically serve it just as we would if we were serving an American amazing Sauterne or something like that, with in a dessert wine, you know, which is a nice Riedel flute glass, and we present it as is, and the fact that the reserve is kind of dry actually works really well with our desserts. They're a little bit off the beaten track. But we have a rabbit dish on where they made like a really beautiful ballantine of the different parts of the rabbit. And there's like, there's some of the rabbit organs, the kidneys, the liver. And those flavors are really, really strong. And they actually appreciate the stronger wine. It's,
yeah, absolutely. Maybe, like something gamier, like with more flavor. Like I mean, I went straight for like foie gras, you know, like that.
Totally. Kind of, like, you know, country pâté, like anything like that, I think is like really, really beautiful. And so we love to serve it on our own. But I can also imagine like on that as a, like a topper for like a New York sour or something, like, a, you know, giving that sort of the kind of aromatics that you would use, you know, almost, it's less about the actual integration of the drinks, but getting that beautiful scent on top of like some crushed ice as you're about to enjoy it.
I can't, the almond flavor in all of these wines is so significant. I can't reiterate that enough. It's like, it's
you
pretty wild.
It,
yeah, well, no, it, totally. But like, it's pretty wild because there's so much pit in the fruit to begin with. That flavor is so powerful, but I think it's really nice.
Yeah, because by the end of the day, we're not crushing the stones here. We are making sure that we don't crush them. So it's just because the cherries has been growing around the stone that we have this almond taste in the wine.
Which leads me to my question. So, what are you doing with the pits and the stones? Like, do you have any plans of like maybe making something along the lines of like a maraschino liqueur? Like, you could do something that it's another process, but like it could be really cool. I mean, just saying.
You're absolutely right. But right now, it's just going back as fertilizer on the fields. The only thing where you could say we're using a bit of it is when we are producing our kirsch, which is actually distilled on the whole berries. But that's basically it for the time being right now.
So you do make a kirsch?
We do make a kirsch.
Oh, cool.
And it's quite special, actually, because when we get the alcohol back, we add on a bit of water. And it's a very special water because it's from Iskilu, which is the fifth cleanest water in the world, which we have in Denmark, in Jutland. So by the end of the day, we end up having a 43% kirsch, very dry. But like a digestive, like a grappa, it goes very well. And it's
when does that come into the United States market?
You have to ask.
All their water comes from a Polynesian island on ships. why do you have such pure water in Denmark?
Wow.
Good question.
That's a good question. That's you, Anne-Marie.
I thought it was only Polynesian islands that have bottled water.
But to get back to the point about Miguel, yes, it is a very interesting way of doing a cooperation also for a winery, having a beer, Miguel, going around. Well, he has our wine all over the world in his bars in a demijack. It's a special cuvée just made for Miguel. And by the end of the day, it is special to introduce a cherry wine together with beer, but it has been one of our major success to do it that way, that we have like a bit of a special angle on introducing a wine in the scene, also here in the United States, together with a beer manufacturer or in the bars, in his bars, and together with Shelton Brothers. But we get the focus because it is a special product, and we think that by doing it that way around, instead of perhaps through a big wine merchant, we get more focus.
So do I have time for one more question?
Yes.
One thing, you know, I work with a lot of wines from the East Coast as part of, like, our local ethos.
Stop. This is an awesome panel of experts. Just, you know, everybody say your name and your affiliation before that.
Chris Bala, Grand Army, Mile End.
Damon Bolte, proprietor, Grand Army, and host of The Speakeasy on Heritage
the
Radio Network.
The voice of Heritage Radio Network.
B.R. Rolia with Shelton Brothers Importers.
And Chad Walsh, sommelier at Agrian Restaurant in Grand Central
and
Terminal.
And this guy's asking a question.
And what I'm curious about is, like, we're seeing like warmer and warmer vintages upstate, and which has been great for quality. And I'm just wondering if you guys have seen climate change affecting your output and your crops, and if you've, you know, I know we're growing, they're growing wine at Klaus's Estate and that sort of stuff. And, you know, I just wondered if you could comment on, like, what's happening in terms of being warm in Denmark.
As a matter of fact, when it comes to climate change, I think
that would be the grape wine producers in Denmark that are crossing their fingers to hope for warmer weather in Denmark. As of right now, we have the perfect conditions for the Danish cherries, and as I said previously, we are in the warmest area of Denmark, and it doesn't need to get any warmer. So again, that would be the grape wine producers,
right?
You know, it's great having you guys. I love what you said, Damon, about, you know, Heritage Radio Network focused on like kind of like farm to glass and the agricultural connections of drinks, and it's only a little taste of what you guys.
It's cool to see what they're going to be. You know, like you said, over the last 10 years, what's happened, and
exactly,
can't wait to see what's going to happen next. You know. Really cool.
That's great. Yeah. Let's do a quick wrap up. I know, Chad, you have an event coming up.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go foraging with us on October 1st and again in the middle of November, the chefs and the crew from Agern are taking people out to go pick some herbs and go mostly northern New Jersey. We're going to go out there and get really wild. We'll cook you lunch afterwards because you're going to be exhausted because it's actually a lot of work. You have to bend over and pick stuff out of the ground. But it's super fun and super educational. And so,
what are some ingredients that you might find on this trip?
Oh man, it's such crazy stuff. Like I learn new ingredients every day. But you know, it's a lot of these greens and things that we would characterize as being like weeds, stonecrop and sorrel and all these things that we associate with Danish foraging. But you can find them right here in northern New Jersey and Connecticut and New York, and it's super fun. So agernrestaurant.com, you can check it out there.
And beer, one more time, the festival in Boston this weekend.
This weekend, the Copenhagen Beer Celebration. It's Friday night and two sessions on Saturday. And then our own festival is the last weekend of October in Louisville.
So it's our boy McKellar.
It is.
He's brought his Copenhagen Festival to
he
Boston.
He is. He just decided, why not? Why not bring it to the U.S.?
I have to say, I know Justin Kennedy's going to be there, and I would say it's the festival I want to go to. So great job, everybody.
Time, yeah.
And just wanted to announce we're doing another Oktoberfest event at Grand Army on October 1st and 2nd, featuring a bunch of great things from Sheldon Brothers.
Oh, yeah, like what?
Well, some beautiful fresh gravity casks of
from
German
Franconia.
Lagers.
Franconia.
Yeah,
Franconian some gravity cakes.
Franconian I was joking on the cakes. Way in that these Danish folk are from Frederiksdal, and I thought either Frederiksdal or Franconia, Germany.
It is the season for our Franconian gravity kegs. Look at that. Jimmy, you're going to have a couple
the
of those.
The best beer you can taste.
Love them. And
in
then
New
what,
York
Damon, what's up for you in fall, man? Speakeasy.
Well, actually, Jimmy, this Sunday, Heritage Radio Network is going to be having our host party for the break open party for the fall season at La Piccio, which is our buddy Mr. Caponelli, who is also a host on Heritage Radio Network. It's his spot. We're going to be having our HRN party, right? That's it.
That's going to be awesome.
It's on Sunday the 25th, right?
You can check that out too at heritageradionetwork.com.
Yeah.
Another shout out to our buddies. There's the New York City Craft Beer Fest, October 14th, 15th. Let's check it out. Some beer experts like myself will be speaking there. So, hey, you got to check it out. All right. Thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Anne Marie, right here. Michael, you got to say your name one more time.
Michael from Denmark. Thank you for having us.
Michael from Denmark.
Chad, Chris, Damon, my surprise guest, and B.R. Roya. Thanks for joining us on the heritageradionetwork.com. I know that Maggie Seiden has been tweeting away. It's always worth checking out. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers again, Justin Kennedy, Maggie Seiden, our engineer, David Tadashur. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Cheers,
ching,
Jimmy.
Ching. All right. Yeah, woo.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.